when you create space because you have listened to yourself, where you get that dialogue out of your mind, it's like shutting down all the browser tabs on a computer. There's more memory to process what the other person's saying.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Leads to Growth. I'm your host, Chris McCoy. We're here with the National Association of Sales Professionals. And today, once again, don't you know it, we have a special guest. Today, we've got Oscar Trimboli. Oscar, thanks for joining us today, sir.
G'day, Chris. Looking forward to listening to your questions and hearing what maybe the audience are asking you about listening to.
I love it. So in case you didn't pick that up right away, maybe you weren't listening, but Oscar is the author of Deep Listening, also these great cards here, this active learning toolkit he wrote, as well as a great book. Oscar spent 30 years in and around sales management, sales marketing, around Silicon Valley. And now this guy consults for some of the top companies in the world, Air Canada, Cisco, Energy Australia and Google, et cetera, et cetera. PayPal, I mean, Reebok, list goes on and on and on and on. And Oscar now lives in Australia, as you heard by his awesome little bit of a twang there. And Oscar teaches deep listening. And this is such a beautiful tool for us sales professionals out there. I think most of us find a lot of our problems because we didn't start out by listening properly in the beginning. So, Oscar, thank you so much. And how did you get into being the deep listening man here?
I think it all started back in a boardroom in Sydney, 2008, April 2008. And I can remember it really well because there was bushfires all around us at that time. And it had got into the air conditioning duct. That's how long it had been going. So quite memorable. I can still smell it now when I think about it. And we were in the annual budget setting process for our year, 18 people on a video conference and in person, Sydney, Seattle, and Singapore. And it's a 90-minute meeting, Chris, and it's pretty important. We're setting budgets for the revenue line, setting budgets for the cost line. And I take it pretty seriously, as do most people in the subsidiary, because revenue line set quotas. Quotas set people up for success or not. So we're pretty passionate about getting a manageable, maybe a stretch, but still a manageable stretch, whereas the corporate office is interested in growth, as much growth as possible. And maybe they don't think about the human consequences of their decisions all the time because they see the world through a spreadsheet. At the 20-minute mark, my vice president in the room looked me straight in the eye and said, Oscar, I want to see you immediately after this meeting. My heart sank because all I could think about is, awesome, I'm getting fired. The meeting finished a little early, finished at the 70-minute mark, which is unusual for budget meetings. They typically run over, or they did in those days. And Tracy asked me to close the door. And I thought, excellent. Not only am I getting fired, I'm getting fired in private. And as I walked back towards her to sit down, she said, you have no idea what you did at the 20-minute mark, do you? And I thought, great, get fired in private and I don't even know what I did. As I sat down, she said, if you could code the way you listen, you could change the world. And the only thing going through my head, Chris, in that moment was, yes, I haven't been fired. So I put all the money that I took out of my bank account in my mind out and put it back in. And Tracy set me a challenge, I guess, to code the way I listen. And for the last decade and a bit, that's all I've been doing, whether that's in the listening quiz, where it's a really simple 7-minute quiz where you can learn what your listening barriers are, or you can play with the practice cards to improve your listening that way, or the books. All the jigsaw puzzle games, we've been coding how to listen since about 2008.
Wow, coding how to listen. I love that Silicon Valley term there. And it is so, so fascinating as we talk often, right? We often talk as a salesperson, you believe, you know, the one that you say is going to be a great salesperson is the one with the what? They call it the gift of gab, right? They don't often speak of the gift of listening or the gift of the ears, which makes a great salesperson. I think that's very interesting. So it was also...
Hey, Chris, for those of us who are watching,
yes,
and can't see, I'm fascinated by this leather jacket.
So I wore this based on a conversation that we had where we talked about, you asked a question on social media about tell an example of a story where you were, tell an example of a time where you worked with a salesperson that did a good job of listening. And I really had to think about that because what I came to the determination is most of the time that I believe they did a good job listening, I didn't feel like it was a sale. So I kind of maybe pushed that experience out of my memory. But this one stood out to me. This one was a leather jacket I bought just before quarantine. I was in Las Vegas and I was hanging out with some friends who were who are considerably wealthier than I am at the moment. And you know, just a few years ahead, a few dollars, a few zeros. But they were shopping. We were at the Cosmo in Vegas. And as you do in the middle of the day, you go suit shopping and buy some stuff, right? And so they're suit shopping. And I'm kind of sitting there going, I don't really need a suit. Can't really quite afford a suit right now. I'll just sit here and hang out. Watch out. And the salesperson from across the room, an attractive female, came up to me and said, noticed me looking at a jacket across the row. She said, you know, you look great in that jacket. And she said, you want to just try it on? Like no pressure at all. Didn't press me at all. Would you like to just try it on? Said, yeah, why not? And I put it on. She walks me in front of a mirror. She didn't even say I look good. She's walking. She kind of gave me the eyes. And she walked me in front of a mirror, and I go, oh, I kind of. She's kind of saw my posture. She goes, well, you want to go grab a drink? And I said, what? And she goes, want to go grab a drink? I was like, you're crazy. And she walks me outside of the restaurant, outside of the clothing boutique, to a bar, the chandelier bar in the middle of Cosmo Hotel. I stood there for about 5 minutes. We had a drink, noticed a lot of people looking at me, checking me out. I was with an attractive girl with a nice jacket on and a good look. And we walked right back in the clothing boutique, right to the register. I didn't ask questions. She didn't ask. I didn't even ask how much the jacket was. I put the credit card down on the table, bought it right there, and never thought twice about it. It sat in the closet for a little while, but I was excited to bring it back out here to bring that story up, Oscar. But it brought me to a place of realizing she listened without even me saying a lot.
Mm. What do you think she was listening to and for? Because I noticed in your dialogue, you were talking about your relationship to your more mature friends years ahead of you. What do you think she noticed?
Well, she noticed that I wanted to feel like I was a part of that group.
Mm.
I believe that's what she saw. She saw that maybe I was not feeling as if I was, or I was on a different level of that group. Because I was the one not trying on the jackets and the suits. I was the one kind of on the outside of that.
And I think in that moment was a beautiful example of somebody listening to what it means for you, rather than merely what you were saying, because you didn't really say a lot, but in that moment, listening for what it meant to you. Mm. So there's a big difference between listening to what somebody says and listening for what it means for them in that moment. So the code, by the way, Chris, is 5 levels of listening, and we just talked about level 5.
Ooh.
I think that sales professional did a great job of listening at level 5 for meaning.
I agree. It's very interesting. We were talking about this today in the story brand process, and we were discussing, they were talking about internal and external meanings or purpose for doing something. And I think we often overlook that internal purpose. Yeah, I want to make more money as a sales professional. Yeah, I'd like to make it easier. I'd like to have more time, but I really want to feel like a success. I really want to, you know, it's the why game, right? When you ask somebody, all right, well, why that? Well, why that? And you get down to the real base of what it means to them, and it's internal. So tell me more about the 5 levels, Oscar. So we talked about number 5, which is listening for.
Well, Let's talk about the five levels first. And for those of you who can see on the YouTube channel, if you haven't subscribed to the YouTube channel, get over there. There's some amazing interviews in the back catalog, and I've had a chance to listen to a couple. For those of you there watching right now, you can see the model is iterative. It's foundational. You need to build on the lower levels to achieve success at the top levels. And the top levels really multiply the impact of your time. One of the things Chris mentioned is when you listen effectively at level five, time shrinks for the speaker and the listener. And that sales professional took 5 minutes to sell a jacket that costs Chris a lot of ramen noodles for a couple of months to pay back that credit card. So she did a great job there. So let's talk about the five levels of listening. Level one is listening to yourself. Level two, listening to the content. Level three, listening for the context. Level four, listening for what's unsaid. And then level five, listening for meaning. So we can spend a bit of time on each of those levels, Chris, but I'm curious, as you heard me go through yourself, content, context, unsaid, and meaning, what were you thinking as you were listening to all those levels? Because I'm sure nobody's really deconstructed listening to that depth before.
I wouldn't think so. And the concept of listening to myself, listen to you, was a concept brought to me by Anthony DeMello in the book Awareness. And it was the first time I've ever thought about that concept. And he said that, you know, of course it's important to listen to the other person, but listen to yourself, listen to that other person, because that's where the biases come out. And that concept is, on a daily basis, it's still something that I overlook on a regular.
So at level one, this is where 86% of the research participants, so we've surveyed over 18,000 people with a listening quiz. We've continued to stay in touch for nearly 4 years with 1,410 people who've said, track me, keep me honest, let's see how we go. So we know this, 86% of people in our database are stuck at level one. They turn up to a conversation like there's a radio station, a TV show, a podcast, some kind of noise playing in their mind. It could be the last conversation they had. It could be the conversation they're making up about what might get in the way of this sales call. When you create space because you have listened to yourself, where you get that dialogue out of your mind, it's like shutting down all the browser tabs on a computer. There's more memory to process what the other person's saying. So for many of us, we're not even conscious we're turning up to conversations completely distracted. We're distracted by electronic notifications, whether that's from our phones, our laptops, our iPads, and increasingly our connected watches as well. So one of the most potent tips I can give everybody when you turn up to a conversation is control, manage your electronic notifications. Use the technology. Don't let the technology use you. Chris mentioned Las Vegas. The research that goes into red dots on your phone to show you a notification coming in or a notification you have to be aware of, email, toast, Slack channel messages, WhatsApp, all these notifications all come from a seminal piece of research that was done for slot machine users in Las Vegas. How could the slot machine industry keep people pressing the button and keep on putting money back into the system? That research has been adapted by people in Silicon Valley to grab your attention with notifications. So when it comes to your listening, there is one button in every operating system, whether that's a Mac, Android, Windows, switch your notifications off. There is another little button hiding there as well in most of those operating systems that says, if I'm in a meeting, so that it'll look at your calendar, just switch my notifications off. So right at the beginning of this recording, you would have been completely distracted by Chris's notifications. And that's what happens to all of us if we turn up to a conversation with our devices in a state where notifications are not controlled. Now, some of us operate in professions that we're on call. We might be on call for young kids who are sick. We might be on call for parents that are going through surgery. We might be in a situation where we operate in industries where notifications are critical. Declare that to the person you're speaking to and explain why that is. Because if a notification does come about, they will connect with you straight away and go, oh, okay, Chris told me why his notifications are on because his gran is going in for surgery on a hip, or his child at primary school is sick and they're not sure if coming home. Declare it. For most of us, though, switch the notifications off. In that moment, you can be present. So tip number one, manage the notifications at level one. Second tip is simply take the moment to drink a glass of water before you go into a conversation. All three of these tips are going to be really easy, practical, and simple to do, yet you'll find them hard to practice. So tip number two is drink a glass of water. And drink a glass of water before you go into the conversation, and drink a glass of water about every 30 minutes in a conversation as well. And if you do, it encourages the other person to do the same. Now, for those of you listening and not watching, Chris, what just happened for you?
I just mirrored your having a drink of water, sir. I just decided to reach for my bottle and have a drink as well.
Yeah. So for many of us, if we're traveling a lot in our roles, just keep water handy. Yeah. If you're going into a meeting room and the host, your client or customers or prospects ask you what you'd like to drink, always, always, always a glass of water and enough glasses for everybody else participating in the meeting and a jug of water. What it does is it sends a signal to a part of your body just below your chest. It's called the parasympathetic nervous system, and it tells you to relax. Everything's okay. Hmm. When you drink that glass of water, it takes your state from that position of fight, flight, or freeze to, hey, everything's going to be okay because my parasympathetic nervous system is saying everything's okay. By the way, listening happens in the most modern part of the brain, just in front of the skull. It's called the prefrontal cortex. But the brain is incredibly hungry when it comes to blood sugars, as it's 5% of body mass, but it consumes 26% of blood sugars. So the way to keep blood sugars flowing to the brain, be hydrated. And as much as you like Starbucks, that's not hydration. So if you're drinking a cup of coffee, drink a glass of water along with that as well. And then finally, tip number three at level one, three deep breaths before you log into the video conference, before you go into the meeting room. For me, the ritual is really simple. From the time I get from the curb into the building and meet the receptionist, I'm switching off my phone completely. I'm putting it in my bag. I'm walking in. I'm taking three deep breaths as I'm doing it. And of course, I'll grab a glass of water if they offer it to me. And if not, I've got it in my bag. Now, Chris, this is very easy to do those three things. We know from our research that people who improve their listening the fastest, but more importantly, sustain it, just do those three things. That's all they do. Manage notifications, drink water, take three deep breaths, because then you're ready to listen. We could literally stop our conversation right now and ask people to go away and practice that, and our work would be done, but we've still got four levels to go. How do you feel about those three practices?
I love them. The science behind the glass of water was very interesting to me. I didn't know where that was going. The deep breaths aspect, I like that. It's almost a separating you from the past thoughts, a pattern interrupt to refresh yourself and where you're going. It makes complete sense.
And we use those techniques because you can use them in the conversation once you get to the dialogue, whether you jump into the video conference or you come into a meeting room or you're having a conversation with somebody on a factory floor. If you get distracted, drink a glass of water, not completely, but maybe take a sip. If you get distracted, take a deep breath. They may or may not notice. It doesn't really matter. But all of a sudden, you've reset your mind and, okay, I'm in this conversation. Let's go.
I like that.
Shall we go to level two?
Yes, let's do it. And I love the idea of resetting your patterns, because you're not bringing in all the busyness thoughts that you come in with, all the biases. You're stopping. You're making a conscious effort to stop. And I think that routine, I think, is something that could be very easily not done, as you said, and because we don't see the direct benefits of it. Like, oh, there's not a direct correlation of the benefits, but when you see the way that it plays out, you'll understand how it's benefiting you.
Yeah. And this is no coincidence that whether you're an Olympic athlete, an opera singer, or a Navy SEAL, or a sniper, breathing is a foundational habit in getting you present for that moment where you've got to turn up and perform at your highest level. So breathing. And if you want to read a great book on that, James Nestor, The Art and Science of Breathing. And he was a free diver and decided to understand the art and science of listening. James Nestor's written a great best-selling book on that topic. And I've also had a chance to interview him. And he said, breathing and listening are kissing cousins. That was the words he used. They're very closely related to each other. So when we move up to level two, we're listening to content. At level two, when we listen to content, we're listening for what we hear, what we see, and what we sense. There's three dimensions to listening to content. A lot of people say to me, why am I listening for emotion? That's the sensing part. That's the third level. By the way, you should be practicing in that order. Make sure you're listening to what they hear first, then watch their body language. A lot of people say, Oscar, video conference, I don't get any body language. I say, you're not watching very carefully. You can get lots and lots and lots of body language. Chris, what's the room telling you about me?
So, I'm sorry, what's the...
What's the room behind me telling about me? What do you see?
The room behind you, purposeful, proactive. It's warm, it's inviting, and your brand is everywhere, as well are some very fun, kitschy little Yodas that's just kind of making me see you now as a Yoda. Now I see why they keep sending them to you.
So when you're on video conference with somebody, there will be something in the background. And by the way, if they blur their background, that's telling you something as well.
Messy room now, back there.
Well, Chris, we don't want to judge to judgment too quickly, but when I say if the background's blurred when the person's on a video conference, what could that be telling you?
That could be telling me maybe that they are not in their comfortable space to have a call.
Exactly, which is a wonderful signal for a question you want to ask sometimes. Is now a good time for this call? Now, don't ask that at the beginning because it's a really simple way to push you away.
Sure.
So keep in mind, at level two, eye level is ear level, and humans have evolved that way for a reason. So wherever possible, be at eye level with the person you're talking to. Again, whether that's face-to-face or video, it's essential that your webcams are at eye level, and make sure that you, when you're in a face-to-face meeting, sometimes eye level doesn't mean that you're looking at them straight in the eye. Some of the best meetings can be had at a 90-degree angle from the other person. That creates a sense of collaboration as opposed to opposition. So if you have a choice, maybe sometimes sitting directly in front of somebody isn't the most powerful way to look at somebody in the eye. So just keep that in mind. I wouldn't say change it up every time, but maybe 1 in 10, experiment and see how you go with somebody that maybe you've got a good existing relationship with. See how that goes.
Interesting concept. I never thought about that.
Yeah, there's a wonderful book written called Selling from Their Side of the Table. And it's a concept where this person always sat next to them on their side of the table. No matter what, he'd always explain why.
I've heard the concept before, but I never relate it to the virtual call and the angle. And I've seen some people have me on a call with that, and it caught me off guard, but I didn't think of it as a purposeful strategy. Mm. Interesting, yeah.
Yeah. Finally, people say, Oscar, when I'm listening to all these things, I get distracted. How do I stop getting distracted? Mm. And I say, I'd like to invite you to think about maybe you could ask a different question, because you're never going to stop distractions. Distractions are always going to be there. Learn how to dance with them rather than push them away. If you push away distractions, you give them energy. They become bigger than what they are. So in that moment, just notice the distraction quicker. While you're listening to the other person, I want to introduce the first piece of science for today, the neuroscience of listening. This is called the 125-400 rule. This is the difference between my speaking speed and your listening speed. So Chris can listen to me 4 times faster than I can speak, and he's coded to be distracted. He'll drift away. He'll anticipate. For you listening right now, whether it's on YouTube or on the podcast, you're probably doing something else. Welcome back. And it's good to have you back. Now that you know you're distracted, that simple knowledge of distraction will tell you that you can get back into the conversation quicker because you know the 125-400 rule. Remember those techniques from earlier on when you do get distracted? Glass of water, take a simple deep breath. And the deep breath is always in through your nose, out through your mouth. Time to wave goodbye to level 2, but let's move on to level 3, Chris, unless there's any questions you've got about level 2.
Your transitions are beautiful, my friend. Proceed.
Okay, so level 3, we move from listening to things. So we listen to ourselves at level 1. We listen to the content at level 2. Now we move to listening for things.
Mm.
At level 3, 4, and 5, we're listening for context, for unsaid, and for meaning. This is a big transition. We've built some muscles in the gym, working out at level 1 and 2, and now we're ready to lift the bigger weights. We're moving into context. Context is primarily about how people describe things. It's their language patterns. And I would strongly recommend the simplest way to understand the context is always to get people to fully explain the backstory, because most times when they turn up to a conversation, they're explaining their backstory. So that will describe something as it relates to them in this moment. You know, we need to buy this. We need to buy it because it's going to solve this problem. And the impact on me is this. As opposed to, do you mind taking me back to when the organization first noticed it was an issue? Do you mind explaining who else this is an issue for? How do you measure the impact of that problem? When you discover the backstory, they will also change their backstory because they will relate their story differently because they now look at it over time and they don't fully understand. Now, if you're selling in complex scenarios where there's multiple buyers or influencers in a process, typically in a business organization or a public sector organization, by going to the backstory, you're learning the political landscape. And you should be making mental notes to go, okay, there are 6 people in this process and I'm talking to one of them. How do I cover off what those people want? Now, a lot of the times they're not in the room. You may never meet them. But when we go to level 4, Chris, remind me of the question you can ask to bring those people into the room without them being present.
Okay.
So at level 3, where context starts with backstory, but also listen to a couple of things. How do they relate to time? Do they always talk about the past or the future? If they continue to talk about the past, you walking in there and telling them about how your product or service is going to solve all of this creates a jarring effect for them. They need to fully explain why they're stuck in the past to you before they can move on. And many sales are lost because you're not listening to their time orientation. You're too busy going into the future. The sales is a future-driven profession, and we're always on the next opportunity. We're always trying to progress it to move forward. But the person in front of you may not have fully processed why they need to change. So make sure you don't move too quickly. Oscar, I haven't got time for that. You know, I need to move them forward. Here's the good news and the bad news. Selling isn't about you. It's about them. In fact, it's not even about selling. It's about their buying process. And if you don't understand and orientate yourself where they are at in their process, all you're telling me is your funnel isn't wide enough with enough opportunities, and you're trying to squeeze a toothpaste tube too tight, and all of a sudden something will spurt out and you think you had a magical quarter or month, but then the toothpaste tube is empty. Listen carefully to where they're orientating themselves in time. Again, they may be orientating themselves in the future and the solution already, but the rest of the organization may not. At level four, we're going to come back and ask that question. The other thing is, how do they describe something? What adjectives do they use? I was working on a quality project with a big engineering company, and I was brought in to listen to the workshop around quality because they were stuck. And I asked people to simply put in an envelope anonymously one word they would use to describe the project we were on. And the words they used were draining, unproductive, political, duplicated. There were rich, rich words describing what this project meant to everybody in this room. And those describing words, the adjectives, were really clear signposts to where the project was at. Now, the real issue was actually trust. Everybody didn't trust themselves enough to say it out aloud. That's why I had to get them to put it in the envelope anonymously. But if you are listening four times faster than they can speak, start to listen to how they say things, and more particularly, what are the describing words that you use around a situation. So, Chris, what was that about? There was a shift in your thinking with your reflection just there.
The idea that it's honestly, it just escaped me here. Say what you just said again, please. It'll trigger me.
Describing words.
Yes, the definition of words and the words that you use to describe things. There's a skit in the show, The Office, that I watch, and there's a scene where Michael's talking to somebody and he's trying to get somebody to give him a better interpretation of a voicemail, and the voicemail is a woman he likes, but she's basically saying, I don't want to talk about anything but business, and that's it. And he's trying to find somebody to give him a different reason for it, and the guy says, you know what? Women say more in their pauses than they do in their words. Let's listen to that again. And that concept kind of made me think about this, because it's not necessarily the loud words, the big words that come, but it's the smaller words and the smaller pieces that are in between those things.
A magnificent transition to level four, where we do listen to the unsaid. We listen to the gaps. At level four, we're listening for what's not said. And you may be thinking, Oscar, I'm struggling to listen to what is said. How can I listen for what's not said? Again, I want to introduce you to the science of speaking now, not the science of listening, but it's important as a listener to understand this. This is a 125-900 rule. This is the difference between my speaking speed and my thinking speed. I think 9 times faster than I can express it verbally. Now, some people can get up to 1,600 words per minute. So between 900 and 1,600 words per minute, the first thing that somebody says could be either 14% of what they're thinking or 5% of what they're thinking. So if you are in a conversation with somebody and all you do is listen to the very first thing that they say, you're going to be stuck.
A lot of people just shut down at that first bit. They think they already know what's coming. They already start to think about their reply.
So you'll be in a surface level, superficial kind of conversation. It'll be transactional, and you may win a piece of business as a result of that, but you may not be forming long-term relationships. You may not understand what that means to that person. You may not understand that this leather jacket represents so much more to Chris than a leather jacket right now.
Absolutely. It does.
What does it represent besides a leather jacket?
This represents a status. I believe it represents at the time, you know, it represented some worthiness. I think today it's evolved to me to more of a symbol of, I was who I was before I got there. And so that it's evolved for me, but at the moment, what it meant was belonging. I was a part of that. I was a part of that group at that moment. We all walked out with a bag. We were all on the same level.
Belonging.
Belonging.
She sold Chris belonging, not a leather jacket. And when we can think at this level, it becomes really, really powerful, really, really potent. Let's come back to
you wanted me to ask you a question when we got to level four as well. I got that one coming for you. I'm ready for that one. So let me know when you're ready.
Thank you. Thank you. So at level four, remember, the first thing somebody says is roughly 14% of what they're thinking. If they think even faster, it's even less. So be careful. It's really critical if they're going through the backstory as an example. You can use these three phrases to get the next 125 words out, to get the next 14% of what they're thinking. Now, we're not going to get 100% of what they're thinking. But unless they're a movie actor who've studied their lines really well, most people we interact with professionally are not going to say what they mean or think the very first time in a really articulate way that's useful for them and useful for you in the context of the project or opportunity you're working with them on. So I want to give you three phrases that you can use at any time to get the next 125 words out. The shorter the phrase, the more likely it is they're going to be able to continue on. So you'll notice all these phrases are less than 8 words. And not in all cases, but the shorter the question, the easier it will be for them to answer. So if you ask double barrel, triple barrel questions, don't. Just ask one question at a time. They'll be able to listen to the question and answer it more effectively for you. So the first thing to say is, tell me more. 3 words. The next one could be, and make a version of this that's your own. Don't go, tell me more. Put it in a sentence. I'm curious. Tell me more. That's what I would say. The next one is, and what else? Again, 3 words. And if you're in a strong relationship with somebody and you know them well, you can simply say, and? Now, the third one is the most powerful. It's the most potent. It's also the shortest. So be careful how you use this. Done well, it's liberating. Done poorly, it's intimidating. So be careful how you use this. Here it is. Now, don't worry, nothing froze on the video. And there is no coincidence that the words silent and listen share identical letters. So when it comes to the third thing you need to do is just to pause in that moment. For you in your head, just cycle through 3 breaths in that moment, and that will fill in the gap for you. But do it with the intention of curiosity, not manipulation. A lot of people who say, you know, I'm going to pause because the first person to speak loses. That's not the mindset we want to bring to the conversation. We want to do it because we're curious and we want to be helpful to them. Your job as a listener is not to make sense of what they say. It's to help them to liberate their thinking.
Mm, I love that. You know, the difference between the manipulation and influence, really getting somebody to do something for their own reasons is that intent. You know, and it's the same tool. The pause is the same tool, but when you're doing it to intend to help them get to their deeper whys and needs, and to really hear what they really have to say and what they really need to say, it comes from a more beautiful, powerful, and loving place.
Yeah, and it's all about them.
Yeah.
Now at level three, we talked about the backstory, and we said, look, there could be up to six buyers and influencers or in the process. And I was going to give you a tip at level four. Make sure you do this at about the 70% mark in a meeting time-wise. So if you're in a one-hour meeting, make sure you do this at the 45-minute mark. If you're in a 30-minute meeting, make sure you do it at about the 20-minute mark. You want to leave space for this conversation. And it would sound something like this. Thanks. You've given me a great overview. I'm curious when you mentioned Alice earlier on. She was in a meeting right now. What's the one question she'd really want to ask me? And they always say, that's a really good question. And they do what Chris just did, and they give an audible sigh as they think about it. Now, when you ask those three questions, tell me more and what else, and pause, their body posture will always shift, their neck will straighten, their shoulders will push back, and they'll always sigh out when they give you the answer. So they might say, well, Alice is from finance, and she always asks about the ROI, and she really wants a concrete ROI. And all of a sudden, you've surfaced one of the buying criteria without her being present in the room.
I like that.
Thanks so much. Finally, before we wrap up, if your manager, owner was in the room, is there anything they'd want to know? Is there anything they'd want to ask? Is there anything they'd want to tell me? And what you're unlayering is the unsaid in the buying process. Too many of us rely on the person in front of us to do the selling, and they're the least qualified person to do it. So in a business selling situation, you want to explore as many layers of this, and you have to do it over multiple meetings. If there were six people in the backstory, you can't go through all six. You have to pick appropriate ones each time, and sometimes you may only have time for one, not because one's enough. You just might have a very long story that person tells you about Alice and finance. Now, before we leave level four, any questions there, Chris?
No, this is that one. I really like that one, because you're not often, even if you ask that question directly to the person, you're not often going to get the exact straight right answer. So asking it from a third party is just a really beautiful way to not only show that you care about everybody's buy-in on the decision, but also to get a more truer response. Love that.
Just bear with me for a moment.
Oh, we'll bear with you.
Okay. At level five, we're kind of moving to the top of the model. We're listening for what people mean, not just what they say. Remember that 125-900 rule? There's a big difference between their thinking speed and their speaking speed, but also how you catch it, because you listen through your own listening filters. Most of us aren't even conscious we're doing it. And we're not conscious we're doing it because we haven't done the work at level one to empty our mind and be present for a really productive conversation. I was told this story by Jennifer, a former primary school teacher who was at home looking after her children when her son Christopher came home from school. And Christopher was very excited and said to his mum, Mummy, today we learn math. And I learned that 3 is 8. Now, Jennifer thought she misheard him. And Christopher was still energetic, buzzing around the room. And in a loving mum kind of way, she said, "Honey, could you say that again?" And he said, "Yeah, mummy, mummy, we learned math today and I learned the 3 is 1/2 of 8. And she put her hands in her head as a former primary school teacher and thought, what are they teaching kids at school today? Well, she went to the cupboard in the kitchen and got 8 M&Ms out and laid them out on the kitchen bench, 4 by 4, little soldiers in pairs facing each other. And she picked Christopher up and put him on the kitchen bench and said, "Christopher, I want you to count how many M&Ms are on this side." And he went, 1, 2, 3, 4. And she said, "I want you to count how many M&Ms on the other side." And he went, 1, 2, 3, 4. And in that moment, she said, "See, Christopher, 4 is 1/2 of 8, not 3. And with that, he jumps off the table, goes and grabs a piece of paper, and with a pen, a Sharpie actually in the story, he draws the figure 8 on this piece of paper for his mom. And then he folds the piece of paper vertically and he folds it vertically again. And with this bisection in place, he then tears the piece of paper in half and shows his mom that visually 3 is 1/2 of 8. Now, if you do that exercise horizontally, 0 is 1/2 of 8 as well. So 3 is 1/2 of 8, 0 is 1/2 of 8, and 4 is 1/2 of 8. When you turn up to a conversation, are you turning up to a conversation with a mindset that all 3 possibilities are not only accurate but true, not just for the speaker but also for the listener? If you listen for what people mean and take the time to allow them, like Christopher did, to express his meaning, you'll have a really powerful insight. Here's the insight Jennifer had in that moment. She realized that Chris relates to the world very differently. Chris today is a world champion bug catcher, and I'm not talking the insect variety. Chris can look at computer software bugs in a way other people don't. He solves some of the biggest, most complex computer bug problems in the world for some of the companies I guarantee you use today. And he does that because he thinks about the world in completely different patterns to the way we do. You will interact with people who think that 3 is 1/2 of 8, 0 is 1/2 of 8, and 4 is 1/2 of 8. And you will be fighting a mindset that says 4 is the right answer. Don't they get it? You're not listening. You're listening to what they've said. You haven't listened to what they mean. And when you listen for what they mean, you'll be able to sell a leather jacket to somebody in Las Vegas who didn't realize they really needed it because they weren't selling a leather jacket. They were selling belonging in that moment.
I love that, Oscar. That's really beautiful. And I think questions just keep coming up to me, like questions, you know, because it's very easy, you know, to assume. But I love the idea that some of the questions, they don't have to be elaborate. They don't have to be deep, because I've been in a place where even just the questions, I will double barrel, as you said, or ask elaborate questions, and still my subconscious is doing it. I'm looking for an answer, but I'm also looking to be shown to feel smart in that instance. Letting go of those things and bringing these small little mini questions, these little deep divers that help give somebody else the opportunity, almost like a shorthand ping pong. Like, no, you played it back to me, but I'm going to tap it back to you and allow you to play it again, because I think you've got more to say here. And I think that's I'm really taking this to heart, and it makes a lot of sense. It's social psychology. It's really there's so many more elements, especially in a B2B business deal, that are going into play in that decision, for us to not take the time to ask the questions, to listen to the answers and not look for the answers that we want, but to listen for the answers that they're looking to provide us. I think is a real responsibility of salespeople. And I five levels, y'all. That's.
Can I give you a special bonus just for your audience?
Oh, yes, please. We love special bonuses here.
So a lot of people think listening happens in the moment. Listening happens before, during, and after a conversation. And a lot of people say to me, Oscar, how do I listen before the conversation? How do I listen after the conversation? It's you're crazy. But I wanted to role model something really simple. A week ago, I put a post in a social media site, tagged a group of people, and basically said, what's the best listening experience you've had with a sales professional or not? And a whole group of people responded. If I wasn't listening to Chris before this interview, I would never have known about the leather jacket. I would never have known about the difference between a month of eating ramen soup to pay it off versus what it meant to him to belong. There are many techniques you can use to listen before a meeting. Most of the organizations you work with or the people you work with, you can ask them a simple question before you get to the conversation. You can send them a text, you can send them a WhatsApp, you can leave an email, it doesn't matter. What would make this a great conversation for you? That's all. Yeah. If you just ask that simple question, you can do that. If you want to learn more about your listening, visit listeningquiz.com. Take the 7-minute quiz. Rather than learn more about me, I'd rather you learn more about yourself. When you take the quiz, you'll be able to understand your primary listening barrier straight away and learn three tips about how to improve that from your perspective. So there's a little bonus for everyone who's listening.
My man. Well, I'm definitely going to be doing that this weekend, Oscar. Thank you so much for your time. I love when somebody lives congruent with the things that they're teaching and they follow the processes. Getting the questions ahead of time in the interview was uncharacteristic. It once made Oscar stand out right off the bat. The fact that he used the language in which he teaches throughout our conversation, even if it wasn't elaborate telling you all the points, it was a simple sentence or two, but using his language so that he could align me from the very beginning. I was prepared for our conversations because of the way that he prepared me for them. And I think that that's something special. And tell me more about the post-listening. Listening after the call?
Okay. So the difference between hearing and listening is action. Many of you will be in a conversation with somebody where you've agreed to do something. Days go by, weeks go by, months go by, and they haven't done it. It means they haven't listened to you after the meeting. If you really want to honor and respect somebody, take the action that you agreed to in the meeting. And if you're not planning to take the action in the meeting, explain to them why, because they'll probably understand. So, Chris, what's the one action you'll take as a result of today's meeting, besides the listening quiz?
Ooh, besides the listening quiz, the one action I will take is I will definitely be publishing this this podcast.
Okay. When it comes to your listening, what's one practical tip you'll apply from today?
Oh, one practical tip that I'll apply from today is definitely the routine, the pre-routine before I go to a meeting. The deep breaths, the water, also the other pieces. I always bring my own water, but never encourage others to have the water. Now that I know the science behind the drinking of the water, I'll make sure that I bring that to play as well. I think that pre-listening routine is something that I'm going to put into play because that will always pull back this conversation, this thought, the value that I hold to it back into me with a little anchor before my calls.
All right. And then the final question would be to explore the unsaid with Chris. Today, I'll ask him, if we did this interview all over again, what's one thing I could have done to make it more productive for the audience?
Wow, this guy, huh? Now, I can't imagine, that might be a post question that I have to work on, my friend. You gave them applicable things to bring to life. You told them where they could follow you. You gave them some science behind such. And if you could listen for them, I guess, Oscar, I don't know what else you could have done, sir. I think we knocked it out of the park with this one.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you so much, my friend. I really appreciate you. Y'all, thank you so much for joining us. I know you got value if you were listening. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. Put your stars down there and make sure that you follow Oscar. And listen. Cheers, y'all.